the potential to cause serious psychological trauma to African American students, and we will not stand for it. We will explore every possible legal remedy in the court of law. I know activists, civil rights leaders, ministers, business leaders all throughout the black community who will fight in the court of public opinion against this heresy. It is akin to trying to teach the next generation, the young people, that slavery was not that bad. And if we don't teach our children true history and they don't learn from the sins of the past, then it is very likely that we will repeat those horrors. And we will not allow that to happen.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is conducting a survey, and we want to hear from you. Your valuable feedback about KBOO will help shape the types of public affairs, news, and music programming we bring you and our community in the years ahead. We're also interested in how you listen to KBOO, and we'll use this feedback to help serve you better. The survey is anonymous, however, you will have an opportunity to provide your contact information to enter a drawing. 10 lucky winners will receive a $50 gift card. The survey is open now, and the deadline to participate has been extended to Sunday, July 30th. Go to our website at kboo.fm/survey23. kboo.fm/survey23. Thank you in advance for your time and your feedback. Stay tuned for KBOO's next strategic plan coming soon.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, anti-government activist Amin Bundy is ordered to pay $50 million in damages in a hospital defamation suit.
Portland property owners overpaid for board-ups from a city contractor.
And state lawmakers take on parking requirements in a housing development.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 26th, 2023. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. Far-right anti-government activist Amin Bundy and his associate are ordered to pay an Idaho hospital $52 million in damages. That stems from a two-week defamation trial in which neither Bundy or his associate, Diego Rodriguez, showed up to court. Amin Bundy is perhaps most famous for leading the Malheur refugee standoff, the 41-day armed takeover of a federal bird sanctuary. The defamation case against Bundy comes from a series of protests he led in March of 2022 against the Idaho hospital, St. Luke's. Social workers found that Diego Rodriguez's infant grandchild was severely malnourished and was taken into custody of the Health and Welfare Department to be hospitalized. Bundy then organized protests outside the hospitals, saying they kidnapped the child and were engaging in human trafficking. Abel Abendandolo is a hospital security director. He testified that he ordered a security lockdown and diverted incoming ambulances because of what he feared Bundy and his militia followers would do. He said, quote, "This is not just a guy going rogue. He's like a military leader who's able to coordinate actions and mobilize people on different fronts," end quote. It's unclear how much of the $50 million in damages will get paid. Bundy has defied a civil arrest warrant and remains holed up in his home outside Boise. He claims he has no assets left to be taken.
Portland property owners were overcharged to board up their windows after break-ins. The lack of oversight from Portland's Community Safety Division allowed the contractor, 1-800-BOARD-UP, to charge up to $131,000 for their board-up services. Police also repeated the false claim that 1-800-BOARD-UP was cheaper than paying the city. KBOO's Grant Button has more in the story.
Portland property owners were charged extra to board up their windows after break-ins. That's according to a new report released today by Portland's Ombudsman Office. This is because the contractor running Portland's emergency board-up services directly invoiced property owners instead of the city. The city was supposed to receive an invoice from the contractor and then bill the property owner for the board up plus a 15% administrative fee. However, in many cases, dating back to 2019, the contractor warned of the 15% administrative fee to clients and then billed them directly at a higher rate than they billed the city. The contractor also billed the city for material costs that were higher than agreed to in the contract. The report found that 39% of requests recorded in police reports for emergency board-ups were not invoiced to the city like they should have been. Further investigation was done and found that the total overcharge ranged anywhere from $20,000 to $131,000. Portland's Ombudsman Office made recommendations as to how to proceed. They include having an independent entity conduct an audit of the contractor. The office recommends the city pursue financial restitution for the property owners that overpaid. They also mentioned that the safety division should develop procedures for better oversight moving forward. The safety division director, Mike Myers, responded to this report. He said, quote, "The community safety divisions will work with public safety boroughs on a combined policy and code provisions to provide clarity and meet the collective goals of keeping our community safe," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Bunn.
President Biden designates a national monument to honor Emmett Till. GOP lawmakers mull a government shutdown as leverage for spending cuts. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis cuts campaign staff as he lags in polls. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
At a time when there are those who seek to ban books, bury history, we're making it clear, crystal clear.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden announced the establishment of a national monument to honor Emmett Till, a black teenager who was beaten and killed in Mississippi in 1955 after a Caucasian woman accused him of whistling at her. Vice President Kamala Harris said, "We must remember and teach our full history, even when it's painful."
Today, there are those in our nation who would prefer to erase or even rewrite the ugly parts of our past.
The White House is proposing a rule which would require people have equivalent access between their mental health and medical benefits. Biden called it a real step forward to help Americans get mental health care they need and insurance should provide. Some House Republicans say they don't fear a government shutdown as Congress takes up new appropriations bills. Republican Virginia Representative Bob Good said the House should leverage a shutdown as a way to pass their priorities.
That stare down the Democrats, that stare down the free spenders, that stare down the president and said, no, we're going to do what the American people elected us to do, and the House is going to say no.
Georgia Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene doubled down on her call for President Biden to be impeached and for former President Donald Trump's two impeachments to be expunged.
President Trump was wrongfully impeached twice. And both of these impeachments must be expunged by the House of Representatives.
A Democratic-backed resolution seeks to censure Representative Greene over her controversial comments and behaviors. Democratic Representative Becca Belint of Vermont said censuring Greene is about protecting the health of our democracy and faith in government. As Republican support for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is declining, the presidential candidate laid off more than a third of his campaign staff this week. According to Real Clear Politics' latest poll, DeSantis is below the 20% mark. Finally, the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Technology and the Law held a hearing to examine ways to regulate and innovate artificial intelligence. Co-founder and CEO of Anthropic, an AI developer, Dario Amodei, said it is critical to assess the risks.
Short-term risks that we face right now, such as bias, privacy, misinformation. Medium-term risks related to misuse of AI systems as they become better at science and engineering tasks. And long-term risks related to whether models might threaten humanity.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
State lawmakers put parking mandates in their sights in 2023, and Oregon is among the first. Parking requirements for developers are tied to issues of housing affordability, as making space for parking ultimately contributes to higher prices. Eric Tagadoff reports in the story.
Parking lots dominate the landscapes in many cities, but state lawmakers across the country are looking to cut back on reserving room for these often underutilized spaces. More than a dozen states considered ending or reducing parking mandates in 2023 legislative sessions, following Oregon's lead. Nearly every city in the U.S. requires a certain number of parking spaces to be built for each new business and housing complex. Michael Anderson is a senior researcher with Sightline Institute, a Northwest think tank focused on sustainability. He says policymakers are reconsidering past efforts to overbuild parking lots.
People are saying, wait a minute. There are a bunch of unintended consequences here. There are a bunch of longer-term side effects of building our cities with these expanses of parking lots everywhere. Let's let cities evolve as they will.
Anderson says creating too many lots has environmental, social, and economic costs. The boom in legislation from Vermont to Oklahoma addressing this issue comes after Oregon approved a law last year reducing parking mandates. In the state's eight largest metro areas, mandates are eliminated completely in certain situations, such as within a half mile of frequent public transit. Anderson says this issue is an extension of the larger housing affordability problem gripping cities both big and small. He says the pandemic prompted a large migration of people from big to small cities because of telecommuting.
These housing shortages have rapidly become more bipartisan because they're manifesting in new areas. And I think people are just looking for ways to cut the cost of housing.
Last year, California also eliminated or reduced parking mandates. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Kaiser Permanente workers are holding informational pickets this week in the Portland area. A coalition made up of more than 85,000 Kaiser workers is currently in negotiation with the hospital system. KBOO's Wes Lee has the details.
Oregon workers for Kaiser Permanente are holding informational pickets this week to highlight their ongoing union negotiations with the hospital system. The coalition of Kaiser Permanente unions represents more than 85,000 workers in seven states and the District of Columbia. Negotiations began in April. Their current contract expires at the end of September. Megan Mays is a patient access representative at the Kaiser Permanente Westside Medical Center in Hillsboro. She says members are asking all the healthcare workers to make at least $25 an hour.
We currently have healthcare workers that are making under 20, some at 21, which is nowhere close to what the cost of living looks like for us here in the Northwest.
Mays says inflation has hit workers hard. Informational pickets take place at Kaiser in Portland on Wednesday and the Clackamas location on Friday. A representative for Kaiser says the company wants to use local wages as a guide, while still paying enough to provide competitive advantage. Mays says another ask at bargaining is for more staff to fill vacancies. As an example of the effect of low staffing numbers, she says Westside has 118 environmental service workers in 2013 and 38 today, despite demand at the hospital remaining the same. This has become an issue when people come in for urgent problems.
And then we're having patients sit in our lobby for 3 hours because we don't have a housekeeper to clean the inpatient hospital room. I can't tell you how many times that's happened over the last 3 years.
To address this need, Kaiser has committed to fill 10,000 coalition of Kaiser Permanente unions positions by the end of the year. Mays says that's an important promise because short staffing has been an issue for years and impacts patients.
Kaiser's always prided themselves on saying we're the best, we want to be the best, but that's not the best. And our members are directly impacted by that every day.
For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Wes Lee.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Miles Silvey, a Street Roots intern, about his new article, Rubber Meets the Streets, Privilege, Ability, and Legality, The Politics of PDX Cycling. At 6 p.m., it's Keeping Democracy Alive. Then at 7, it's PDX Progressive Talk Radio. At 8, it's Ditch Digger. Tonight's weather is clear skies with a low of 70 degrees. Tomorrow's weather is mainly sunny with a high of 84 degrees. Today in history, President Truman signed the National Security Act of 1947 into U.S. law, creating the CIA, U.S. Department of Defense, and the U.S. Air Force. The quote of the day is from Bill Russell, an 11-time NBA champion and civil rights activist. He said, "Learning is a daily experience and a lifetime mission. I truly believe in the saying, we work to become, not to acquire."
The federal government grants $120 million in aid for tribes to address climate change. The Biden administration quotes its largest annual funding through its Tribal Climate Resilience Program. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The federal government is granting $120 million in aid for tribes to address climate change. KLCC's Brian Bull has more.
The Biden administration says it's the largest annual funding through its Tribal Climate Resilience Program. Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Brian Nealon told KLCC applications will be gathered until mid-October with plans to distribute money early next year.
As you know, climate change, the longer we wait to start addressing it by moving to renewable sources of energy and reducing our use of carbon, the more expensive it's going to be. This $120 million is an initial investment. It's a down payment on the work that we've got to do across Indian country to help protect tribal communities against this growing threat.
Nealon says tribal communities in the Pacific Northwest and Alaska are dealing with coastal erosion. Other tribes are contending with intensifying wildfires, drought, and flooding. I'm Brian Bull.
For years, it was difficult to find meals like bison pot roast or an elk taco at a restaurant. A chef in Denver is bringing the cuisine to menus, as KUNC's Emma Van De Nindy reports.
Chef Andrea Murdoch is busy in the kitchen. She's baking her light blue sugar cookies with the help of some volunteer chefs.
They're like blue. Yeah, they stay blue. It's awesome.
They do?
Yeah.
That color is made from Ute Mountain Ute cornmeal from southwest Colorado.
Blue cornmeal is something that's very specific to the Four Corners region of the U.S. Like, you will not find this easily out on the West Coast, out on the East Coast.
And this isn't the first time she's used unique ingredients.
I source locally and indigenously to support those economies. Kroger doesn't need my money.
It all started when Murdoch expanded Four Directions Cuisine, her food business. She wanted to create South American cuisine. And through her research, she found that ingredients representative of the culture were pre-colonial, like rabbit, bison, or other foods that existed in the Americas before colonizers arrived.
I have this distinct privilege and honor to be able to take the teachings from others and translate that through menus.
Along with sourcing food from local and indigenous farmers, she forages around her for flowers and grasses, praying to the weather god Iapa for rain. As she cooks, she taps into what she calls her sixth sense and connects with plants and animals that are seen as relatives in her culture.
There's an element of listening to the ingredients and understanding how you're going to honor them best.
Indigenous cuisine like Murdoch's has recently grown in popularity, with many restaurants opening in cities like Minneapolis and Seattle. And for the second year in a row, a native chef won a James Beard Award, almost like the Oscars for cooking. But it wasn't always this way, and there's still room to grow.
We find food from all over the world in our amazing cities, and very seldom do we find food of where we happen to be standing that represents the land and the indigenous communities and cultures.
That's Sean Sherman, head chef of Awamni in Minnesota, and a multi-James Beard Award winner.
And we should really be focused on what's the true food of North America, and you can't understand North American food unless you bring the indigenous perspective into it.
I'm Emma Van De Nindy.
The Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma recently recognized a 7-year-old Chickasaw citizen for bravery for rescuing his 3-year-old brother who fell off a cliff and into a creek. Tribal leaders presented Dakota Duke with a plaque at an end-of-school ceremony. The brothers were on a family hiking trip at a tribal recreation area when the incident took place. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A pipeline that exploded in Virginia on Tuesday is owned by a company proposing to expand a fracked gas pipeline in the Northwest. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is voting on the project tomorrow. With more on the story, here is Eric Tagedoff.
People opposed to expanding a fracked gas pipeline in the Northwest are pointing to an explosion of a pipeline in Virginia as another reason to reject the project. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission will decide tomorrow whether to approve expansion of Gas Transmission Northwest, or GTN Express, which moves fracked gas from Canada to California. On Tuesday, a pipeline owned by the company behind GTN Express, TC Energy, ruptured and caught fire 80 miles from Washington, D.C., causing the closure of a nearby interstate. Dan Sears is with Columbia Riverkeeper.
This should be all the evidence that FERC needs to press the pause button and either deny GTN Express or withdraw it from the agenda.
The cause of the pipeline explosion in Virginia is still unknown. No injuries were reported. FERC commissioners will vote on GTN Express tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. In a statement, TC Energy said natural gas is a critical component of the U.S.'s long-term energy needs and that there is strong demand for it in the Northwest. Sears says GTN Express runs counter to climate goals set in Washington, California, and Oregon, through which the pipeline runs. Spills are a concern as well. In December, a TC Energy-owned pipeline spilled 588,000 gallons of oil in Kansas. Sears also notes the rupture in Virginia raises other concerns about a similar situation happening in the fire-prone areas of the Northwest.
Communities along the pipeline route and near the compressors have been objecting to the project because of its public safety implications, its enormous climate pollution impact, and the public health concerns with communities near the pipeline's compressors.
Opponents are urging Washington Senators Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell to oppose the project. Their colleagues in Oregon have voiced opposition, along with the attorney generals of Washington, California, and Oregon, and the governors of Washington and Oregon. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Hollywood actors have been on strike for 2 weeks, wanting protection against AI and low pay. Simultaneously, large movie corporations are offering near-million-dollar contracts to fill certain AI positions. KBOO's Grant Button has more on the story.
As Hollywood actors and writers continue to strike, large movie corporations are spending big on artificial intelligence or AI programs. Actors with the union SAG-AFTRA began striking 2 weeks ago with a key emphasis on being fairly paid. They say that 87% of actors make less than $26,000 per year. They're also concerned about protecting against their likeness being scanned and manipulated by AI without adequate compensation. Actors and writers say they are not the only ones at risk, as AI has the potential to replace background actors and video game writers as well. However, as the strike continues, companies like Netflix have begun offering salaries as much as $900,000 for specific AI-related jobs within their company. Rob Delaney is an American actor and writer. He stated his distaste with Netflix's offer. He said, quote, "That amount of earnings could qualify 35 actors and their families for health insurance. Having been poor and rich in this business, I can assure you there's enough money to go around. It's just about priorities," end quote. So far, studios have been unwilling to return to the bargaining table with the writers and actors unions. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Bunn.
In other employment news, two bills to protect workers from excessive heat are expected to be reintroduced today in the U.S. Senate, just as 112 members of Congress are petitioning the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to implement nationwide rules. Suzanne Potter has more in the story.
California Senator Alex Padilla is expected to reintroduce two bills as soon as today to protect workers from excessive heat. The first is the Asunción Valdivia Heat Illness and Fatality Prevention Act, named after a Central Valley farm worker who died after working 10 hours in 105-degree heat. Antonio de la Huerra Brust with the United Farm Workers says the bill would establish a federal standard on access to shade, water, and paid breaks.
It's nothing radical. This is just the basic necessities for survival that any human being doing physically strenuous activity in these sorts of deadly temperatures would need to survive.
Opponents say the proposed federal rules would be too costly for the agricultural industry. California passed its own rules to protect workers from heat exhaustion in 2015. By contrast, in June, Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill that would eliminate local ordinances that require water breaks. This week, 112 members of Congress wrote to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to urge the agency to implement a federal workplace heat standard. De La Huerta Bruce says OSHA needs to step up.
Your ability to survive your day at work, your ability to come home to your family after working in the field, should not be dependent on whether you live in a red state or a blue state. You know, your access to water, your access to shade, your access to a paid break should not be up to your governor.
A second bill, known as the Heat Act, would require the feds to establish a program to improve extreme heat preparedness, planning, and response. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Ultra-white paint, developed nearly a decade ago by researchers at Purdue University, is getting a fresh look as it inches closer to commercial availability. According to Shulin Ruan, professor of mechanical engineering at Purdue University, the acrylic paint reflects more than 98% of sunlight and deflects heat into deep space. Joe Ullery has more.
An ultra-white paint developed in a Purdue University lab is making its way through the innovation pipeline, and it seems timing for its market debut could not come at a better time. Putting a coat on during scorching summer temperature sounds counterintuitive, but slapping on a coat of the university's whitest white acrylic actually lowers temperatures. It is designed to reflect more than 98% of sunlight. Purdue professor of mechanical engineering, Shulin Ruan, says the paint cools surface air up to 8 degrees Fahrenheit.
Our paint on the roof, it kind of sends off all the heat from the sun and from its own emission directly through the atmosphere and lost to the deep space. So the heat totally, you know, goes off the earth.
The barium sulfate-based paint is on track to become commercially available in about a year and is expected to cost about the same as a regular can of paint. Ruan says in hot, dry climates, the ultra-white paint reduces air conditioning needs up to 40%.
In certain days when it's not too hot, you do not need to turn on your air conditioners at all. The paints will just provide enough cooling for the temperature indoor to be comfortable for human beings.
The university is working with an unnamed company to produce the paint. A fine-tuned, lightweight version is being refined to use on vehicles to reflect heat. I'm Joe Ullery for Indiana News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Congress will hold a hearing tomorrow on the challenges small businesses face in rural parts of the country. Some difficulties include employee housing issues and controversies surrounding artificial intelligence. Eric Tagadoff has more on the story.
Rural small business owners are speaking before Congress on Wednesday about the unique challenges they face. Among the speakers at the meeting is Josh Phillips, owner of Spawnfly Fish in Owako, Washington. He says one of the biggest obstacles is the lack of infrastructure and housing in rural communities. Phillips says his business is renovating a garage space to build out housing in order to appeal to potential employees.
The ability to attract somebody that has the level of expertise for what we do on the internet is challenging without our ability to house them, which historically doesn't fall on the owner to house employees, but kind of does in these rural communities, and it's not something that's unique to us.
The House Committee on Small Business is holding the hearing called Rural Entrepreneurship, examining the challenges and state of rural small businesses. It will be streamed online on YouTube. Phillips says there are other ways the federal government could help small businesses, such as making lines of credit and loans through the Small Business Administration more accessible.
It's not that they aren't trying to do the right thing, but our ability to circumnavigate the red tape as an owner-operated business has been challenging for us in the past.
Another topic Phillips says he'll bring up at the hearing is artificial intelligence. He says AI can be hard to talk about in rural communities.
When you bring up the thought of AI, it turns into a morality question. And my worry is that small rural businesses are going to get left behind if they don't become at least a little bit aware of the tools and how the tools can be utilized.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 26th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes David Rosenberg and Wes Lee. The producer is Grant Button, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Alex Gonzalez, and Eric Pegatoff. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our beloved members. If you would like to become a member, support our programming, and receive on-air compliments, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
This is KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Miles Sylvie, intern at Street Roots, about his new article, Rubber Meets the Streets: Privilege, Ability, and Legality, the Politics of PDX Cycling. Welcome, Miles.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. So your article talks about the tension between affluent cyclists and bicyclists of lower income, including homeless Portlanders. For folks who may be new to the issue, how does the Portland cycling community get divided up? What are the main issues?
So obviously there are many, many types of cyclists in Portland, but some of the ones who are the most vocal on online cycling blogs, on Reddit, sometimes within activist circles, are often the really wealthy recreational cyclists who are, you know, on luxury bikes, using it for athleticism. And some of the hot button issues for those groups have been kind of accusing homeless Portlanders of making cycling impossible by because certain encampments